Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 and WHUT-TV. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable analyzing some of the top stories of the week. My guests are Dr. Yannick Lam, independent journalist and professor of journalism at Howard University School of Journalism, and Dominique Moody, reporter at NBC4 Washington. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Zero. Okay, Dominique, what is going on with the dog napping? You today did the story about yet another French bulldog dog napping in Virginia.
Right. And so what we're seeing, at least from police, is that there's a growing trend of people who are choosing to steal French bulldogs. And if you don't know, French bulldogs are expensive, right? You know, and so I was able to talk with a woman today who had her dog stolen. The suspect apparently went inside of her home and tried to steal all three of her French bulldogs. She had three, got away with one. She said that that one French bulldog alone cost $4,000. She
had
another. Yeah, I know, you never think about it, right?
And so $4,000.
Well, what I could do with
for one dog?
You know, you think about that, right?
You're like, she had three.
Exactly. So that's with $4,000, $8,000, $12,000. Wow.
Right. And so, like, what we're seeing is that people are, they could be stealing them and then reselling them, right? You know, you think about what I just said about the cost, you might be able to get that money back. And so that was just the latest instance. Over the weekend on Saturday, there was another woman, DC woman. She had just been coming back from a walk with her French bulldog, Hendrix. That's his name, Hendrix. And so as she was going into her home, she started to notice that there was some cars that were following her. She was on her way home. And as she was trying to get into the front door, there was a man who ran all the way up the stairs. And then he was able to interact with her. And it wasn't an easy interaction. This was a confrontation where he said, if you don't give me the dog, you know, he threatened to, you know, kill her. Mm-hmm. And so she ended up giving the dog away. And again, we're finding, kind of like what we were just talking about, a lot of instances in which people are taking things that don't necessarily belong to them. In this case, it's dogs. And so what police in Fairfax County said is that this could potentially be a growing trend that we see not only in DC, not only in Virginia, Maryland, but across, you know, the United States. And so according to the American Kennel Organization, they said that French Bulldogs right now, since September 2022, have been the number one targeted pet in the U.S.
Why are they so expensive?
I think the reason why they're expensive is that when it comes to breeding them, it's a process, right? And so, like, for a lot of the French Bulldogs, sometimes the mother, you know, or just the French Bulldog as itself, it has a large head. And so the process in order to make a French Bulldog, there's a lot of surgery involved. And then on top of that, they go through a C-section. So it could be a costly surgery.
C-sections for dogs?
For dogs, right? You know, and so that's what we are finding happening. And that's the reason why they're so expensive. And so we're seeing this trend continue to go over and over again. And then on some good news, Hendrix yesterday, he was reunited with his owner. So that's a little bit of good news.
And there was also a woman today in Prince George's County. It wasn't a French bulldog, but she had her Shih Tzu.
Right.
Is it Shih Tzu?
Yep.
Chinese. how am I doing? She was reunited with her dog. I believe the dog was 16 years old. That's old for a dog. Because her car was, here we go again, carjacked, and the dog was
in the car.
She got the dog back. Don't know what happened with the car, but you know, again, this is completely about this overall issue of crime in the DMV. But I just find the whole dog thing is, I'm not a pet owner, I just find all of that fascinating, particularly, and as Dominique just said, if you have a dog and there is obviously a market for the resale of, can I say it, hot dogs.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, I said it. then you buy a stolen dog, it's very likely that your dog could be stolen from you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a growing trend. And it's like you know, the way in which they resell it nowadays, it's like not only could it be word of mouth, it could be Facebook Marketplace, it could be Instagram, you know, social media. You get into that, you know, that just adds another layer that investigators have to try to go through in order to find the person responsible.
Something to think about. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Tom calling from D.C. Tom, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you. I was listening to the previous callers, and, you know, I was thinking that, you know, there's not one right answer or one root of the problem, you know, children, people who commit crimes, they're traumatized. You know, they can have issues. Police, you know, they're traumatized. They can have issues. You know, but you, one of the things I was thinking of, I may not be able to articulate it as well as I've read it or heard lecturers, but, you know, when it comes to African-American, particularly African-American men, you know, there's like an innate trauma that is already in us. You know, we lock our hands to the steering wheel. Whenever we see a police, we cringe. You know, there's a distrust. When we're dealing a lot of times with white people, you know, or our superiors that, you know, growing up, people who I thought were smarter than me, you know, it wasn't until I went to Howard University I realized that there were thousands and thousands, millions of African Americans who were smart and achieved great things.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's just an innate distrust from what we see, from what we've experienced, from what our ancestors experienced. So I just wanted to share that. They all had great points, you know, as far as, you know, what about the police? Yeah, you know, they're helping, they're in the front lines, they're doing what they, but they also do abuse. But what about the people who commit crime?
And Tom, I would, and you're absolutely right. There is no one simple answer, and the problem is multi-pronged. You have great police officers who are trying to keep the community safe every day. You have people who do respect, you know, the police, but then you have these other kinds of, you know, elements who don't respect the community. They don't respect the police. They are out there committing these horrific crimes, and that's the whole point. You know, even with some of the, you know, the historic trauma that has been a part of, you know, the lives of African Americans in this country, that notwithstanding, we do need some solutions now that kind of incorporate all of these issues. So thank you so much for bringing these things up. I want to go to Ashley. Ashley calling from D.C. Ashley, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, how are you? I just wanted to comment. I agree with Tom. This is multi-layered, and we have to attack it from different perspectives, right? But my question is, why are we not holding these young individuals accountable? You know, the mayor went on to say that one individual, she committed the same crime like over 7 times. Where are the parents? Where are the guardians? And why aren't we holding them accountable? Secondly, when it comes to police, we have to retrain the police. One thing that stood out to my mind during the protest after the murder of George Floyd was a group of young people trying to have a conversation with the police, but the police officers that were engaged with these young individuals, and most of them were black males, were all officers of color. So they were black and brown, while the white officers were standing off to the side. You know, if you look at the statistics, it's mostly white officers that are the problem, that are doing the chokeholds, that are committing these murders against innocent people. Why are they not engaged? Why are the police officers in D.C. not engaging with community members to show that they are safe, that you can call them, and that nothing's going to happen to you if, you know, you haven't done anything wrong? So I think there's multiple layers here, but why aren't we holding the parents and the guardians accountable? Because I would have had my ass handed to me if I would have done something wrong by my parents, by the folks, my neighbors, aunts, uncles, you name it. And we've gotten away from that, and I don't understand why.
So let me give you a little bit of pushback on this, Ashley, because while certainly communities of color, and you two can chime in about this, certainly have reason to be concerned about their interaction with police, particularly white police officers. But let us be clear. For example, this issue with Tyre Nichols in Memphis, Tennessee, and his murder, all of those officers who have been accused are black. Tyre Nichols was a black man. And so certainly that taints the argument about this just being white officers. This is about police officers and communities of color. Unique.
Sometimes it comes down to being blue.
Yeah.
In some places. So you can't kind of cast a wide net exactly on what's happening. But there are, like she said, it is multi-layered, so there are a lot of different things that need to be addressed, from the family involvement to community involvement to the schools to individual accountability to police and how they handle things and their community relations and their involvement with people. Because there's a perception problem that's been existing for a long time, but there's a lot that needs to be addressed. There's a lot that needs to be addressed, and you do have to hold people accountable for what they do.
And this legislation in D.C., if it passes as the mayor has written it, is supposed to kind of address some of those things.
Right, exactly. And I think that, you know, we're hearing from multiple people about what they feel needs to happen, right? And it's like, we talk about it being multi-layered. We talk about the relationship that we have with police, and it's like trying to understand how you can address a problem when there's so many prongs that you need to address in order to fix it. It's like, oh, we need to, again, it goes back to what we said earlier. We focused on one issue, another one pops up. We go to this issue, another pops up. So it's like, I mean, the situation that we have on our hands is like, we have to have everyone involved. Everyone has to come to the table. It's just about like how to decipher who's going to do what, how police are going to get involved, how local officials are going to be able to govern the way that they need to govern. And also, like, when it comes to the community, how they're able to move around in their community, you know. And it's just like, it's important to try to have those conversations and have those community town halls.
And
that's one reason a lot of this stuff is systemic, you know, because it does have so many layers and it's been going on for so long, and the problem keeps getting worse, you know. So some things never get addressed, or they get addressed in a piecemeal fashion. So they just start, it's like a multiplier effect almost.
Right. And it keeps happening from generation. Like the last generation before mine, they were dealing with it. Their generation, in a sense, were dealing with it. Now we're coming to the new generation where you may have all of young people, because I don't want to just generalize all of them, because there are great young people out there who are doing amazing things.
Absolutely.
You know, and so like to try to like pigeonhole them. I think that sometimes, and you hear this when I'm out in the stories, is that it's a small percentage, right, of young people who are doing, you know, repeating
over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Repeated offenders. And it's just like, how do you address them without getting any type of potential hostility towards them, right? Mm-hmm. If you try to mentor them, or you go and you talk with them, you're not sure how that interaction may come across, because you don't know how knee deep they may be in their situation. And another thing, if I may, real quick, you don't know what they may be dealing with before they even get to school.
Exactly. And that's why all those things need to be addressed, too, because people are too quick to throw them away at the same time. But they didn't get that way overnight.
Yeah. Right. And before I let you go, to your point, Ashley, we should all have been blessed to have the kind of parents that you did that would put the fear of God in you, as I'm sure was the case with Yannick, Dominique, me. But unfortunately, that is a difficult reality in that parenting has changed. Some of the challenges of parenting, challenges of challenged communities. And so, yeah, we should all be so lucky as to have those kinds of parents who will tell you not to commit crimes, to be respectful, to go to school, and have those children follow those rules. And there are a great many children, as Dominique said, that are doing just those things. But then there were so many others who, whether they be repeat offenders or new offenders, that are causing this problematic situation. Ashley, thank you so much. I do need to move on. However, we will get to the phone calls still, if you still want to comment. But I do want to talk about this mysterious illness that is reported, you know, in China, which is starting to fill up the hospitals, and we are getting some reports here in the DMV of children with these strange respiratory illnesses, and it's deja vu all over again. It starts as flu, and then it becomes much more serious. We've been through a pandemic already, okay? And even today, the state of Maryland dropped a promo with the Secretary of Health encouraging people to get their COVID shots and their flu shots. This is something that, look, winter is coming.
Yeah, they're calling it a triple-demic.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
But the World Health Organization is monitoring China because they've had a spike in a lot of respiratory problems in North China. And they want to make sure that it's not something that can turn into a pandemic. So right now they're saying it's nothing under the unusual, and it's primarily linked to people coming back because they were shut down in the past. So right now they're believing them, but they're also kind of leery and definitely spotting, because in the past when there was SARS, like in the early 2000s, they were hiding patients and putting them in ambulances, driving them around when the World Health Organization's officials were there to investigate. So, and they had to threaten them with closing their offices and things like that. So they want to, you know, they've had a track record of trying to conceal information at some points, not consistently, but at some points. So they do have to kind of keep their eye on it. And you always have to monitor outbreaks to see what's going on with them so you can get a hold on it earlier before it spreads across a country, across a continent, across the world, like we just did with the pandemic. But right now we have flu, COVID's not over, and then we have RSV. And pneumonia. So there's a lot of things going on, and there's a lot of different viruses and bacterial infections that are going on. So people still have to think about masks, about washing their hands, about using hand sanitizers and doing all those things, because we're not in a safe spot completely, and talking to their own physicians and making decisions about vaccines. So they're encouraging people to get those vaccines. But of course, that's a personal decision too.
And as you said, in dealing with this issue with China, we, as was the case at the very, very beginning of the pandemic, and I think you put a really fine point on it, this is a trust but verify for the World Health Organization. Certainly the Chinese government is notorious for being deceptive, you know, as it relates to these kinds of things. But China notwithstanding, this stuff happening here, if you have a young child, you're definitely going to have to pay attention.
Absolutely pay attention. And I think that it's important to talk with your pediatrician if that is what's best for you and your family. Because a lot of times when young kids or some of the youth, when they're interacting with other kids, it could be easily transferable to someone else because they're in such close proximity to one another inside the classroom. And I think that you have to make sure that you're checking your own symptoms. You have to make sure that, I mean, like Dr. Lim said, I mean, it's a trifecta, right? You know, you got pneumonia, you have RSV, you have COVID, you have the flu. And the interesting thing about the flu is that when COVID was here at the pinnacle, at the height of the pandemic, the flu, you didn't hear about it. You know,
I remember because we were protecting ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Being careful.
Exactly. So it's like the percentage went down, but COVID went up. And so now that, you know, the conditions around the pandemic have kind of lightened up and some of the guidelines have kind of lightened up, now what you're seeing is that there's a resurgence of the flu. That's why you had a lot of DC area or Maryland and Virginia area hospitals that were getting overwhelmed by some of the patients coming in. Now, you know, hats off to a lot of the healthcare workers out there, because they're churning, they keep going, they haven't let up. And so And the other thing is that they won't turn you away. And so you're running into a lot of these wait times that are high, And I think the reason for that is because you have a lot of patients who are coming in. And so the recommendation from a lot of healthcare experts is to make sure that you check your symptoms, make sure that, like Dr. Lam had said, you're using the basic hygienes. If you're in a situation, and I'm not a medical doctor, I'm just getting this from what they tell me.
Play one on TV.
I was like, they tell me, and I then go to the public and tell them. But just make sure that you're having your conversations with those individuals that you trust in order to make sure that you make the best decision for you and your family.
And another reason sometimes the numbers go up too is because people are so quick to go to emergency rooms rather than going to see their physician or to a clinic or something. So that raises, you know, and that raises the wait times too, because they're not designed for that. They're not designed for primary care. But some people, that's their main option also. Right. And for some others, it's just their default.
Right, layered approach.
And, you know, I remember when we first started covering the COVID-19 pandemic, and there was so much that we did not know. But one of the things that was really, really clear that people forgot, and I was just looking up one of the numbers from the CDC. In 2019, 25,000 people died from the flu. And as long as I can remember, even as a little kid, we were always made aware that the flu was not a cold. The flu was something completely different. And you know, reporting on this, we would always say that the people who are most susceptible to the flu are babies and seniors. They always said that, as well as some people, we weren't using the term immunocompromised. Mm-hmm. But every year, more than 10,000 people, every year people would die of the flu. But I guess we had gotten so used to it, and you have flu vaccines and everything else. And then, of course, the pandemic came up. And as you said, we just didn't hear as much about it, because the same thing that people were telling us about COVID, about washing your hands constantly and all, it's the same thing. But again, this thing with children in the hospitals, certainly something that we definitely need to keep an eye on. I want to go back to the phone lines. A lot of people have some comments. Let's talk to Gregory, calling from Sacramento, California. Gregory, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon.
Hey.
Thank you for taking my call. As a D.C. native, I moved out here to Sacramento about 20 years ago. And I would say that as far as the crime is going on, the youth crime, it's not just the D.C. thing.
Right.
It's happening across the whole country. And I'm wondering if your panel could answer a question for me. Do you think that the laws need to change? Because right now, the youth, the things that they're doing, the smash and grab, the stealing, the cars and all that, they know they can get away with it because they're young. They know they're going to get away with it because they're young and they get a slap on the wrist. And then, as another caller alluded to, they go out and repeat the same crime.
Yeah. Yannick, you
want
to?
Well, some jurisdictions are trying to address that too, so that they don't think that they can get away with it. And some of them are doing it on their own, but some of them are also doing it because there's adults who are pushing them to do that, just as people have done that with young people to move their drugs and things like that. So some people know that they're not going to get any time or they won't get that much, so they're pushing them to do that. And then also there have been some young people have been responding to like TikTok challenges and things like that as well. But they do need to know there's consequences. So
accountability.
Yeah, there's accountability for that. But also it needs to address some of the underlying problems that are causing them to do it in the first place.
Right. And when you speak with some of the victims of some of the crimes that are happening, you know, mm-hmm. I think from what I'm hearing is they do believe the laws need to change, you mm-hmm. know, inside of the community. You know, I had an opportunity to speak with a father of a young person, and his son died while walking to the store to get laundry detergent.
And, wow. I remember that.
It was such a hard interview, because you're listening, you know, I look at him, he looks just like he could be my uncle. I looked at the picture of the victim, he looked like he can be my cousin or my brother. And you empathize with some of the victims and what they say is really what they see on the streets. You know, they are the ones who are dealing with these issues, and then they have to try to pick up the pieces, or they have to try to live life without having a loved one. And what I hear from them and what they tell me is that they believe the laws need to change. That's yeah. what they tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gregory, thank you so much for giving us a call. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I did want to at least briefly talk about this T.I. and King thing. I must be honest, I have not focused so much on T.I. since I was dancing in the club a long time.
What kind of dance were you doing?
Let's not talk about it. Dominique will probably know a little bit more about that.
Let
me just, you know, kind of summarize. You know, obviously T.I., a hip-hop icon, been around for a really long time, but his son, King Harris, has been giving him and his wife, you know, Tiny, you know, Mom, the pushback regarding how he lived. He claims that he was raised in poverty with, you know, cockroaches on his face and the whole bit. And I don't know what to believe about that, because T.I., as, you know, we can assume that, you know, he's, you know, had a couple of quarters during the course of his career, particularly as it relates to his son. The issue for me is not that. The issue is, and we've seen this a lot, where high-profile people and their children, because King Harris is supposed to be having a budding rap career on his own, are trying to show a bit of chest-thumping street cred and also calling out, you know, the family publicly. Like Ashley said, you know, you have your butt handed to you if you go against what your parents said. Well, you know, T.I., they got into a little bit of a scuffle on social media, the whole bit. You know, again, this is a thing of, you know, what's going on with our kids.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think what you hit on the head was social media. Mm-hmm. Right. You
yeah, because like, he was making it go viral while he was doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And so it's like the power that social media has to reach anyone who is out there. And it's like maybe some of the conversations who aren't celebrities are typically happening, or those conversations are happening behind closed doors. And so social media is now playing an impact in like, and I'm not really well versed in reality TV, so I don't even know too much about some of the reality TV stars. But what I can tell you is that I see a lot of talk on social media about which character is doing this or what person is doing that. And so it's like social media has a huge influence in how the public can react to certain situations where we may not be well versed about what's happening behind closed doors.
Well, there's obviously something going on in the family, because you're talking about two parents and their son. So that shouldn't have been happening in public anyway. I mean, it's just like, you know the rules of the road in your family. So if they weren't doing it out there, it wouldn't have been there to go viral unless he was doing it in their living room. But they were out in the public. I think they were at a Falcons game or something. So that should
have
been.
And they got into a scuffle. I mean,
yeah.
Ooh.
Well, I think he probably got tired of them saying what he was saying,
exactly.
too. And I mean, they were all provoking each other, and they seemed like they were kind of joking a little bit in the beginning, and then it kind of escalated. But still, everybody was loud. Everybody was in their faces, and that should be something. It should have been at home if it happened, but there's some strange dynamics among them.
Yeah. And finally tonight, the National Christmas tree toppled yesterday in front of the White House. It was windy, and I was thinking, let us hope that this is not some kind of political metaphor. But
over these last couple of weeks.
But
I didn't even think about that with the tree.
Well, see, there you go. See, there's something else to talk to the students about. But it was really windy. It had never nothing like this has ever happened before. Fortunately, no one was hurt, and they were able to ride it. But this was a big story.
Stations were out there. We were out there. NBC4, we were out there. We were reporting. And it's just like, I mean, you know, it's, you think about like the traditions with the White House, and anytime there's Christmas, people are in the spirit. It's a spectacle. People like to talk about it. It's a talker.
We're talking about it.
No, exactly, right?
There you go.
It probably wasn't anchored for that type of wind. It was probably anchored for a normal winter day.
Right, exactly.
So. Yeah, I mean, you know, we see during the storms, you know, trees are uprighted. So this one was not anchored at all. It wasn't. There were no roots. It was just.
No, cutting. I mean, it had a cord or cable on it or something like that. But it probably was just to hold it in place. Nothing to prevent it from falling and flying or something.
I have to check with the Howard University School of Engineering to find out exactly. Exactly how that happened. Yeah, don't ask
Watch
me.
Watch the weather. Tie it up properly.
There you go. Tie your tree down. Well, yeah, there. You know, the show must go on, and they are going to, you know, have the, you know, the lighting and all of that tomorrow. So let us hope that no other problem happens. Dr. Unique Lam, Dominique Moody, thank you both for talking to us. I really, really appreciate it. And we will continue to have these discussions, and hopefully something will get better.
Thanks for having us.
Sure. Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, finally tonight, I don't know if the mayor's Act Now anti-crime bill is right or wrong for the city. And as we've discussed on this program time and time again, something must be done. Something has to change. Now, will this work? I don't know. But I do see a bit of a silver lining in all of this. The community meetings and hearings across the DMV are packed because people are paying attention. They are participating in trying to make their communities safer. It is a call to action, a clarion call for people like you and me to do our part and make a difference. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, November 29th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.